This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Sieber. Good morning, Robert. Good morning, afternoon, evening, dear listener.
Good morning, Peter. We spent 3 days in the Alps. Our AI in the Alps event was coming up. What is your takeaways? Let's go through the topics.
It's great, as always.
It's great.
Only great. Beautiful environment. Meeting with people, some of them which had been there before, some new ones that we only knew by LinkedIn or digitally, so to say, meeting them in person, seeing so many happy faces for the same reason that they meet with other people with the same interests, same exactly. Topics that they can share with.
Exactly. So let's go through the topics. We had one workshop on reinforcement learning with Jan Kutnick. What's your takeaway there?
Yeah, I think for me, an important takeaway, because we had a lot of discussion within the session, which I am in, you know, for those of you that are not aware. At the beginning, we sit together with the complete group of around 30 people, and then we gather the topics, and then each of us go through each in the breakout session. So the one that I was in, I think half of the attendees had been looking into reinforcement learning. And then, so it was like, checking with Jan Kutnick, learning from him, what is RL and when can we use it? But also on the other way, we looked at, and we shared our experiences, as I said, of those that had been looking into. And as we moved on, I found out, and I checked it with the other ones, is that we can only today, maybe it's going to stay like that, use reinforcement learning as a project. So the discussion was around.
So it's not scalable.
No, it's about, it's always, we have, let's say, a group of, let's say, machine builders, them around the area of building machines, right? And on the other hand, there's also users, or at least, of course, they are building machines for their users. And as we have started, 6 years ago with machine learning, in the meantime, there are many solutions, typically with, let's say, machine learning, and maybe moving into the Gen AI space, that have been embedded as a solution inside the machine or next to the machine, that are sold to the customer as a complete solution, independent of the fact that you and I talked about, can you put a price tag with the machine learning AIs? But we found out that is not a thing you can do today. You cannot sell a reinforcement learning algorithm as part of your solution. You can sell the algorithm, actually, or you give the algorithm, but you cannot produce a solution. So the machine needs to get into the customer's side, and then you start building the reinforcement learning solution. So as a project, right? So that means that you yourself, if you sell a solution, need the people to be able to do that. You need it on your own side. You need it on the customer side. That's a separate topic that we found out as well, that was always very useful if you have capable people with regards to AI on the other side, and or you work with a company that does exactly that.
So there will be no auto ML for reinforcement learning.
Auto ML you can use, I assume. I'm not going to say yes or no, but I assume you can on the side, but as part of a project again. So now, I think the big topic, and we talked about that many times, not only within RL, is that we as a group, I think many times found out that we are moving from, let's say, 60, 70 years of deterministic, rules-based automation. You know, that's the way our PLCs have been programmed from the beginning. Not sure exactly. I think the first PLCs were there around 1950, 1960, I believe they were introduced, right? And since then, we have been doing deterministic programming. That means, you know, if something happens, go right, go left, if a certain value, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Very deterministic, which means if this situation happens today, then a certain solution will come out. And if it happens tomorrow, the same solution shall come out. That's what we have programmed for 60 years. So all the people today, including the young generation, I mean, the people who just, those of you listeners that just came from university, that just came from a course on the introduction of PLC programming, which is going to change. That's the thing, right? But that's what you have learned. You know, that's what we are used to. And what we have found out, I believe, together in many, many, many cases, that there's many challenges. And what I just talked about with regards to the reinforcement learning is just one of them, is that we're moving from deterministic to probabilistic. So the discussion is about, you know, how, if we would put a reinforcement learning or any kind of other solution that is probabilistic on a machine, how are you going to deal with getting it through certification? So the person who is certifying is used also to, maybe not 60 years, but the person has been doing this for 30 years and says, okay, show me your deterministic solution. I run it 2-3 times and I see everything is fine and you get a stamp from me, right? Now, that is very difficult today if you're going to have a base solution today and it will improve over time. So number one, how are you selling that? You know, you're selling it at 100% and you say, you know, it can move to 120, 130%. It's about optimization. So I'm going to stop it there for the moment, I think. But that is a general, very big outcome that we had, I think.
You mentioned moving away, and this is a good point because our second host, workshop host, Stratis Gaffers from the University of Amsterdam, he says we are moving away from AI models towards AI systems. So models are not in the main focus. We are going to have AI systems in the near future. And that it's very interesting because we recorded an episode with Richard Socher, I think 3 weeks ago. And he's also sure that we will talk more about AI systems in the near future. I think that's interesting.
I recall, yeah, but I recall that you asked him about the AI as, or the Gen AI as an operating system. Is that right?
Exactly.
But that's what he did not completely agree with, I believe. Or he had a...
No, he wants to talk more about Gen AI systems. Kudos to Jakub Tomczak in Silicon Valley. But no, he said that LLMs will become the CPU, maybe, but the models or the system still needs RAM, still needs a drive, still needs connections, still needs Ethernet, et cetera, et cetera. So that was his conclusion, I think.
We'll probably talk about the future development when we come to the end and share with you regarding the next AI conferences that we're going to be doing, specifically, as you mentioned, with Jakub. Yeah, so that was for me specifically, and then I listened, and many, many times the topic came back. It also, I think it was included in Let's Then Share, the third one that we had, which was about UX and XAI by Marco Huber and Tom Cadera. So I think it's like, well, that's always the topic of where are we standing with the European AI Act and what it is that we need to do. And that's the same. I felt in the session that I joined is like, maybe confirming what we hear, see every day, is like the law, the act, is expecting us to do things which we, as, and I say we, as a group of specialists, are not always understanding or capable of knowing how to get there. That was my strong feeling.
Yeah, but did you recognize that there have been reports that some companies are in favor of suspending the AI Act? I think there's an ongoing discussion in the moment.
Yeah, huge. Yeah, we heard it from a number of companies. I think I've seen Peter Kurter from Siemens represent certain specific statements. There was a specific request last week of a number of European companies. I recall Philips,
Mistral, yeah,
was part of them. Yeah. And then at the same time, I saw a message yesterday, you know, we recorded on the Monday, that was Sunday, that things will just move on, because there was the message with the new commissionaries of the European Commission that things were going to maybe halt it, or there was a request to be halted. I don't know. But the general feeling is by many European folks, people, organizations, companies, that we've moved too far. That's the topic I just mentioned. If we start with giving ourselves a law and the specialists, now we are only 30 people, but we are 30 specialists on the topic. And if we are not always certain around the topic that I just said, that how we are going to move from deterministic to probabilistic, and how can we do then XAI? Now, having said that, there is this, the list of the co-criteria, I'm sure you saw them, that was discussed by Marco. That's a great first step. But as we looked into them at the same topic, we were not always certain how we could, you know, show how we could make sure that the list of requests that we're going to get out of the AI Act, that we could deal with them. And having said that, you know, bottom line, we within industrial still have a relatively easy, I say relatively easy, because those of you that are also dealing with AI within a consumer space, within the B2C space, you know, you're going to have many more requirements. I've no idea, but I would say maybe we have only 10% in the B2B. Typically, if we sell a machine, and the machine, you know, is going to go to a customer, but the interaction with users is relatively small. Many times, you know, on the shop floor, that the interaction is that somebody, you know, puts the machine on at 6 a.m. in the morning, and 10 p.m. another person will push the button again, maybe, if at all, right? So
I don't know how it was for you in your group, but for me, the session with Marco and Tom was more a technical discussion, because there was a lot of asking questions, how to create, for example, explainable AI for time series, which tool should I use for this? So I like it, because the groups have different topics than this, different perspective on the topics. What was your opinion in your group? Was it also a technical discussion, or was it more what you said, let's call it a management discussion?
No, I recall that's the words that you use, that Jan uses in a different way, when at the end, and we're going to come and we're sharing just a couple of learnings with you. We don't go into the details. And then when we asked our experts, Jan said exactly that as well. He said, you know, there were three sessions and three of them were completely different. So the one, yeah, I didn't bring that away if it was more technical, more. What I can say is, in the combination of Marco and Tom, and specifically Tom as our specialist, as the guy who runs the company that provides user interface design, that's what I recall, is, you know, how can it was always the user perspective, right? And we've seen the user perspective requests from the very beginning, and where I was, it was always an important topic. Always need to make sure that the user is going to be able to work with, and that was the central topic within that session. So it is like, what is the law? What is the AI gonna expect from us? And then how can we provide it to the user?
Perfect. Let's share at the end maybe the learnings of our participants. 2-3, Peter, what did they learn?
Well, the one that I just said is an important one. I think it was about deploying LLMs. That was it. So yeah, we did ask at the end, like, what the specific things that was about shop floor optimization was shared. Many people said the agentic, most certainly.
We talked about agentic AI too, right? So it wasn't the...
most certainly. How could we? The elephant in the room, right? And most certainly we did. So, and that's, it's always the same. So if you are, you know, 3 times 10 people, one of them will have concentrated more and has already used agentic. Some of them who were very, you know, oh, what is that all about? It's only a hype. Have in the meantime understood that there is something. So agentic use cases and approaches. You know, what can we learn from each other? What have you been doing? What can I learn from you?
Yeah, that was interesting because in my group there was a discussion: should I use a RASP API or should I use a MCP? And then the one said, yeah, you should only use that. And yes, we do it like that. But this is all about, right? So learn from each other. Yeah,
and that was actually already just one step on. We do ask also for what did you really enjoy? What can we improve? The only thing that I recall as a proposal, what could we improve, was the proposal that maybe we should have a list of acronyms from the beginning.
Exactly.
So there you go. MCP, of course, we put up RL because we've been using about RL as the representative of reinforcement learning from the beginning. That was a proposal there, yeah. What was there more? How to construct world models. We haven't talked at all about the way that we started this time, which was a very impressive demo by the Spleen Lab guys, Chris Hagen and Max Reinhardt. We were lucky. We had a little bit of rain when we woke up the first morning, but then...
A thunderstorm, yeah.
But then as we were going to have the demo, things were perfectly fine. That was really impressive, right? So the guys talking to the drone. And I do recall that for you, it was very important to say it's more than just being able to talk to the drone, right?
Exactly. It's a vision language model on the drone. And it's also able to talk to you and you can ask the drone, what do you see? Please count the umbrellas. Please check if the trees are quite good. Please check, is there enough? How many people are standing here outside? Please follow the white van. And please come back and land on the rooftop. So that was really impressive. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really impressive. I do recall that.
And to build a vision language model on a drone, right? So in this case, it was for a live demo on the laptop, but they promised us we will do it on the drone, right? That's great.
Yeah, and the thing that I learned there is that was from Serkan Arslan, is as he was explaining, when we talk drones these days, and not sure where the word comes from at all, but he was explaining the different types of drones. So for me, until couple of days back, drones were these things that fly in the air. But he said, no, we have land drones as well.
Water drones.
Right. Yeah. And we have, to say for the same reason, what is it, deep diving or sea drones, I believe. So that was new. And maybe for that reason, that was the other discussion we had. And we have talked about it many times. Maybe, you know, the drones, specifically the flying drones, are not immediately a use case for a majority, I would think, because most of us are from discrete manufacturing. We typically always talk about the shop floor, but I can immediately, and we could immediately imagine those of us that are in process, you know, having the huge process plants, utilities, you know, where we provide gas or fluids or whatever we do, those kind of industries, I think they're already in use today, right? So if we have a huge area where today we have maybe hundreds of people walking around, checking the sensor values, typically, is everything still working, which is a wonderful use case already to start with, number one. And number two, as we've said a couple of times, you know, it's always about look at this very impressive AI-based technology and what can you think about it? It doesn't have to be exactly the one-to-one use case, but how do you think that you can be using it within your area?
I highly recommend the episode with Stefan Mills you did about his safety AI platform, because it's all about that. It's about a safety AI platform for drones, for cars, for trains. So very interesting episode you did with Stefan, I think. We would like to say thank you to all our participants, but especially to our partners Jonas and Hannover Messe. Thanks, guys, for this wonderful 3 days in the Alps, talking about AI, industrial AI, industrial grade AI. It was fantastic, as it is always, I think. Yeah.
Yes. It's always when we do, and I never have the feeling that the people that we have, that they don't dare to suggest if for whatever reason. So we always look into very happy faces at the end. So what is next, Robert? What is our plans for maybe for certain listeners who would be interested in joining us for when autumn is the next?
Autumn in October at SICK with Jakub Tomczak. We already talked about Jakub. He's coming from the Zuckerberg Initiative, and we'll talk about Gen AI systems, agents and AI systems. Very good. And then we planned something totally new together with Stratus. We want to do an AI and Amsterdam. So we want to visit the guys in Amsterdam at the University of Amsterdam, and we will get a deep dive into their research, in their topics, and maybe the PhD can pitch their ideas, and we will have a small group, 10 people, flying to Amsterdam, and we'll get a deep dive into the research topics at the University of Amsterdam. If you are interested, send us an email, send us a LinkedIn message, what else, everything else, send us a WhatsApp or call us. And I think it's a very interesting approach. And Jan also invited us to Prague, Jan Kutnik, and we can do, every month we can do an event now, Peter, but let's see.
Oh yeah, and we have more proposals, more invitations from just Mercedes, just to name one, just without going into calling out names of people who've been there, if maybe they don't want the other people to know that. Oh yeah, there's so many people say, oh, come to us, we want you to come to us as well. And I think that's a wonderful proposal, Robert. I haven't been to my favorite home country city for a year or two, so I would be very much looking forward to join you and, as you suggest, around maybe 10 people who would be. And the reason we do that is because Amsterdam, the University of Amsterdam, yeah, is a, what you say, powerhouse with regards to AI, industrial AI.
Yeah, exactly. So Max Welling is there, Kees Snoek is there, Stratis Gaffis is there, Qualcomm is there. They do a lot of products with Toyota. And yeah, it's a real AI powerhouse there.
Great. Looking forward to, Robert.
Great. In the main part of today's podcast, we will talk about production planning in AI. And Peter, thank you very much. It was a pleasure. And it's always good to see you once in a year at AI in the Alps.
two or three times.
Yes, exactly. Thanks a lot.
Robert, thank you very much. Dear listener, have a great day and hope you're going to join us again soon.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Rico, congratulations on winning the award yesterday.
Thanks.
Payload pilot.
Yes.
What do you do and why can you win with it?
So first of all, I think we have this issue with nearly everybody. It's pilot, right? So
It's
pilot with AI, right?
Yes, yes.
So it's the gimmick with the AI in there, but we spell it pilot, yeah. Okay. But we have this issue nearly every time. What do we do? So of course, we won the Industrial AI Award. So we are in Industrial AI, of course. What we actually do is so-called detailed scheduling, the next generation of detailed scheduling. So imagine you're standing somewhere on the shop floor, machines are running, workers are running around, material arriving, and every second something unexpected happens, right? So the discipline of planning this, scheduling this, so knowing which production step, at which time, at which machine, with which material, who's working on it, it's a incredibly complex
but
problem.
But I have an MES system, I have an ERP system, everything is solved.
No, nothing is solved in terms of scheduling, because now, if you have, and not everybody has,
if you have
a nice ERP and MES connection, then you have the data, right? You have the data, you have the connection, and we put intelligence on top. We plan, we schedule, right? And we do this using AI technology, blazing fast. So we do it in seconds, right? This gives you the ability to steer and not just plan. You can react. We do it as a pure software as a service solution hosted on AWS using REST API to connect the really intelligence on top, and proven by a lot of KPIs, we deliver best plans.
What is your typical customer?
Yeah, our typical customer really is mainly here in the German-speaking area for the moment. We also have customers in China, for
example.
Can you
name two free names?
Yes, of course. So, for example, SICK is one of the first.
Greetings to Neil Chassin, CTO. He was in our podcast, I think, 6 weeks ago.
Ah, nice. Really nice. So we've been in touch with him at the very, very beginning of our collaboration. So SICK to name, then definitely Starteam as a PCB manufacturer with deep footprint here in Europe, one of the few still having a footprint here and having factories in Asia. And of course, this is where we have our main footprint, I would say. It's the PCB and PCBA industry with a lot of PCBAs we are working with.
Why this branch?
Yeah, so like always in life, you find your focus, I would say, right? At the very beginning of Pilot, we were thinking, nice guys, nice algorithm, we can solve everything. But of course, costs you a lot of tears, you learn that you have to be focused. You have to be focused, you have to speak the language of the people, you have to understand their production issues and challenges. So we had to focus.
So do you have a domain background in these branches?
We have a deep domain background in metal, in discrete manufacturing in metal. And then, because of Starteam, I already mentioned as a customer, Starteam was a customer, now it's also our investor. And now we have a lot of touch to other companies, customers of Starteam. And this is the second, so we have still discrete manufacturing and metal, but this is the second thing we are focusing on.
Let's walk through a typical customer project. Can you please explain the process? When you talk to Neil Chassin, and Neil is very interested in your solution, can you please go through the process?
So at the very beginning for us, it's important also due to focus and also due to that we really want to be honest company. We really want to deliver. This is one of our core values. So we never sign a contract without being there. So we deeply try to understand how people work in there, how the factory is organized, and whether we can model this in our algorithm. So first of all, of course, we have sales talk and things like that.
Sure.
And then we do this deep dive, right? Already with the team, which would onboard the software later on. Okay. Then we have the deep understanding. Out of this, we create an onboarding plan, right? And after signing the contract, we put this to a system. There are several systems available. We use Monday, which helps you to onboard with your customer software as a service solutions. And we have a clearly structured plan with tasks for the customer, tasks on our side, clearly structured how to...
Can you share the tasks for your customers?
Yeah, so of course, it's mainly due to data in respect of data, of course. So of course, we need to get access to some sources. We need to understand, right, what's in there. Most of the time, we do the matching to our API from time to time. SICK is a good example. Of course, customers like SICK, they do have the IT power to do it on their own, right? If we go more to, I would say, SME companies, right, then it's more on our side to do the modeling. And we do it one time and then it's done, I would say. So these are, of course, the tasks for the customer to give us the understanding of how does the production work like and how does this fit in their data.
But from my point of view, when you talk to small and medium-sized enterprise, this is a big obstacle.
Yes, it is, definitely.
To define the process, how they produce goods. Because on line one, the guy is doing a totally different approach than the line 14. Yeah?
Definitely. And of course, we try to also talk about these things, but we do not understand ourselves, and this is not our business model
as
consultants.
So you map the process?
Yes, we map it, of course. In this process, you talk about things and you can change things also at the customer side, but we map the process as it is, right?
You map the process and you map the data.
Of course, exactly. And based on this, we do our scheduling.
Okay.
And we deeply rely on what people tell us, because if we do not get the correct, I would call it rules, it's not really rule-based in a mathematical sense, but we need the rules to be able to come up with a plan which is really feasible, right?
But sometimes there are no rules.
There are always rules, right?
Yeah, but maybe not written rules.
Of course. Yeah. Most of the time they are not written. And this is why we need 20 to 25 days from our side to talk to people and to onboard.
To understand, to look at the process.
Right, exactly. So we need this time. So we always say we can do it in 3 months and you are live. You have an ROI after 1 year. To be realistic, of course, also customers, they have different projects. So it takes sometimes a bit longer. After 6 months, we are live, mm-hmm. right?
So let's go further into the process. So you already mapped the process. What happened then?
After mapping the process, we come up with first plans. Mm-hmm. And we discuss this in the project group. And mainly in this project group, there's the planner. Every customer has a planner, right? And most of the time, there's also the managing director of the factory. So those guys are in there, sometimes IT. But those SME companies, they mainly do not have a real IT, right? They have a couple of guys for office IT and that's it.
So exactly.
It's more or less the planner himself. And then we discuss the quality of the plan. And then we
about
go
his plan.
No, our plan
okay.
in comparison to what they did before.
Okay.
And then we see what the impact is. And then we see where maybe our plan is lacking so far in terms of feasibility. And then there's this fine-tuning phase.
Domain-specific fine-tuning.
Domain-specific fine-tuning.
Yes. Let's look a little bit under the hood because it's an optimization problem
yes.
you are tackling. What's happening in the field AI? So are you using time series models, reinforcement learning approaches? Can you share a bit?
Yeah. So at the end, really, since it's an optimization problem, we tackle it with a, I would say, very complex and high sophisticated genetic algorithm. So that's the main source of it, right? Of course, there are parts attached to it, yeah. but the main source is really, I would say, a perfectly fitted for this problem genetic algorithm we are using. Yes.
And can you share a bit what is in this algorithm?
Yeah, definitely. So we do mainly two steps. So first of all, we simulate, right? So it's kind of a digital twin in there. Yeah. And based on this, we grab the right solution and do it really in the plan. So these are the main two steps, right? And so we build up, first of all, kind of a digital twin and then do the optimization.
But it sounds a little bit like a reinforcement learning approach. To give a certain goal for the shop floor, he needs to reach.
So there is no
traditional reinforcement learning?
Exactly. Okay. But of course, I understand where you're coming from. It has some attachment to this, definitely. Yes, yes.
How do you integrate with other systems, MES, ERP? So do you have a API?
Yes, we do have only one. Yes, it's REST API we are using, RESTful. And the idea mainly is to really, with every API call, we get the whole problem, the whole challenge, the whole factory setup, everything again in every API call. So really no or nearly no persistence on our side, right? And we give back the perfect plan. So it's really this one RESTful API where everything comes to us.
But you mentioned it's not a scalable product, right? It's still a project approach, right?
No. It's perfectly scalable.
Okay.
It's perfectly scalable. It's software as a service at its best, right? Hosted AWS, just connected via this one API. Every API call gets a problem getting back the whole plan. And so it's perfectly scalable. It's definitely not a project approach, but of course, you need this onboarding phase, right? Like every software as a service or nearly every software as a service software, you need to onboard it to the factory you're working in, right?
And you need to maintain?
No, of course, always a bit, right? And with every software as a service business model, you also sell the support and things like that. But there's maintenance is included, of course, in terms of we do not sell software, we rent out software. So maintenance is also included in the business model, right?
Okay. Can you share some figures? You don't need to name companies or customer figures, but can you share a bit of the benefit using your approach?
And this is also for us still incredible, to be honest. And this is, of course, not only since we are the best in the world, it's also due to that a lot of customers are still doing, I would say, Excel-based and expertise-based planning. So there is some room in there to improve. So I would say, for me, the best number, it's not the highest number we ever reached, but for me, a great success was that there is one customer who invested 3 years in a PhD thesis saying, please implement this PhD student, please implement the perfect algorithm for us, right? And after those 3 years, they had this in place. We got in touch and we outperformed this by 10% in utilization, right? So this is, for me, really incredible. And we also benchmarked in various scenarios against Siemens a couple of weeks ago. And in specific scenarios, of course, not in the whole world, but in the scenarios we did, we had improvements in different KPIs. So decrease in delays, for example, up to 26%.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
And this is...
That's huge.
That's huge. That's huge, definitely. But also, to be really honest, it's because we are good, but it's also because the room of improvement is still high.
Yeah. What about going one step further, talking about supply chain optimization? You are focused on the shop floor. Is the next step for you supply chain optimization?
Could be, definitely, but not on our roadmap for the moment, to be clear. So we really, really focus, and it's a deep decision, and we also had to learn to be focused like this on shop floor optimization, really, and just detailed scheduling, right? Of course, the next steps in optimization, but still on the shop floor, would be everything in terms of material, right? And second thing is everything in terms of shift planning, in terms of human resources on the shop floor. If you ask me, cooperating with companies who do this already, there are also nice AI solutions in there, for example, in shift planning for the moment.
Yeah.
Would be the better one, what we are discussing in the moment. These would be the two next steps.
Does your algorithm or your model explains the planner why it changed maybe this process, why it changed process 2, 1, 3? Because he needs to have trust in the solution.
Yeah, so no, we do not provide an explanation in terms of we did this because of, right? So there is no explanation, right? It's a simple mathematical optimization, right? So it's a kind of a, it's not the optimum, but it's close to the optimum, right? And we can prove this one, right? So the only thing is that he knows that it's feasible, right? So he has to check this, of course, but this is why we do the onboarding phase. And then we always have, we have a small UI, right? Yeah. We started without an UI because we thought we just optimize and everybody has to trust. Of course, nobody trusts, right? They want to see it, right? Of course.
And never change the running process.
Exactly, exactly. And it's, I would say it's a surgery on the heart of the factory,
yeah,
right?
So, absolutely.
So they have to see and they have to get this feeling. And for me, one main aspect in the UI is that we always display the KPIs, the main KPIs the customer want to see. Throughput, number of delayed orders, things like that. And we always display the offset to a different plan, right? And this gives them the ability to see, ah, this gets better, this gets worse. But overall, in overall optimization.
Is there also a forecasting included? So because you need to be flexible when you think about common situations in the market, is there a forecast?
So we do not forecast,
okay.
But of course there is, I would say, an implicit forecast if people are forecasting, right?
Yeah, okay.
And of course they do,
yeah.
Right? Of course they have kind of a forecast in terms of orders, depending on their business model, right? And of course we model this, but we do not do this, right? Again, focus, right? This is the material discussion, for example.
So
right?
You have an API and everything is solved.
Exactly, exactly.
Rico, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.